The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Advertising Corporation and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found in his Washington Times Communities column, Forbidden Siegel Talk.
It's time now for The Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but there are too many solid reasons not to believe in the God of the Bible, or any God at all for that matter. Yes, I hear that all the time. I don't agree, but I do hear it, and on my show, people are free to express it. Welcome to our sanctuary, a sanctuary for skeptics and doubters, a place where you can express your concerns about Christianity and still be treated with respect. Joining us today by phone, Richard Haynes with Atheist Nexus International. Richard, welcome to our program.
Thank you, Bob. How you doing?
I'm doing okay. How are you?
I'm doing well. I got to tell you, I'm skipping something very sacred to me to be on the show. I'm not able to watch Walking Dead while it's on live. I have to wait a little while. So.
Oh, boy. Now, I have not watched that show. What is the is that the one about zombies?
Yes, but it's actually, the zombies are just kind of the background of the story. The story itself is actually pretty good. I'm a comic book nerd at heart, so
yeah,
based on the comic book series.
But I'm not so much into comic books. I am into science fiction, though. I have asked this question to other atheists before. I've noticed that a lot of atheists are into science fiction and fantasy, and I've often wondered if they're replacing something. Do you have any thoughts on that?
You know, there's a pretty funny skit I saw one time comparing sci-fi nerds to fundamentalist Christians, and you know, somebody might be quoting Bible scriptures, and the sci-fi nerds are, oh well, Adama meant this, or Kirk said this, and you know, they're quoting back and forth. No, what they meant by that was, and they're doing exactly the same thing they would accuse the Bible thumpers of doing. It's pretty funny.
Right.
So it you know, it's probably true to some degree. There's actually some atheists I know, like Richard Dawkins. I've actually had an argument with him about sci-fi. He doesn't like it at all. He doesn't like Harry Potter, any of those things. Thinks they're useless, and I love them. I think it's great.
Yeah, but you just view it as a fun adventure.
Oh, sure, of course.
Do you think there is something about human beings that just kind of wants to look out, though, and say, could there maybe be more to all of this? Do you think that's maybe instinctive in our nature?
In all of us, and when we don't understand something, we always create something. You know, in the old maps, when they didn't know where something was on the map, you know, the water they haven't gone to before, they would create dragons and say, here there be dragons.
Right.
So we always create something. When we hear the sound in the jungle, it's always some type of entity we create to give it a name, you know.
So you would consider yourself an atheist right now, not an agnostic, but an atheist? You would make that distinction?
Well, it depends on your terminology. Actually, I believe that I'm 100% atheist and also 100% agnostic at the same time. They're not. I don't think there's a scale, like you know, kind of like a graduating scale from theist to agnostic to atheist. I think they're two totally separate things. Theism has to do with my belief system. Do I believe in God? Do I have a God? No, I don't, so I'm an atheist. Do I know that there's no such thing as outside of time and space, some type of being or entity? No, it's impossible to know, so therefore I'm an agnostic. And I think that was the original meaning of the word agnostic, is that it was impossible to know, not that.
Right. An agnostic would say he doesn't know. Now, I've met atheists who act like they do know there's a God. I have found that atheists such as yourself...
They do know there is a God?
No, they would say that they know there is no God. I have met atheists who would say that. I know you're not saying that. The atheists I've found, and tell me if I'm not representing you fairly, who actually organize into societies, I think technically would be agnostics, but the difference would be they would say, we are open to better arguments for the existence of God, but so far, based on the ones we've seen, we lean towards saying he doesn't exist. If you could show us a better one, we'll look at it. But at this point, it seems like there isn't a God.
For the vast majority of atheists, I would say that is true, and that they are also agnostic. They just don't understand the definitions.
Right. Whereas a pure agnostic might just shrug his shoulders and say he's not right. necessarily see, convinced
I,
one
I
way
would
or the other.
Call that more apathetic, or you know, so I wouldn't call that an agnostic technically, because, like I said, agnostics believe that it's impossible to know. You know, the whole Russell's teapot thing. You know, there's no way to prove that there's not a teapot flying around Jupiter or something like that. You know, if we can't see it with our eyes, but there's you know, we have to remain agnostic. Like, if you told me there's invisible pink unicorns flying around your studio, I wouldn't believe you, but I would have to remain agnostic because I really couldn't prove it.
Right. You'd have to say, unless I'm there to see it with my own senses, I can't say I don't know, but the likelihood that there are pink unicorns is next to nothing.
Yeah, my senses could be wrong as well, but you know, that's why we have the scientific method and things like that.
Right, right.
I haven't always had this position. Actually, I was give you a little background on myself. I was born pretty much non-religious in a non-religious home. My mom's family was Catholic. My dad's family were Baptist and Methodist, which meant I never went to church at all.
Yeah.
You know, we maybe went to midnight mass at the Catholic church and sunrise Easter service with the Methodist, but that was pretty much it. But I very early on always loved science fiction. I was a big fan of Carl Sagan, and I pretty much became an atheist without even knowing what the word was. I thought that, you know, it was all foolishness, that there's nothing to it. You know, I was one of those kids, annoying little kids. But I also had a very messed up home, and I ran away from home at 15 years old, and as often is the case, you know, you don't get a sandwich without somebody telling you about Jesus. And I was able to put all that aside, and I had a very genuine born-again experience. I literally felt it physically. I think I can explain a lot of that psychologically now. But it made a great influence in my life, and I can say, as an atheist, that I probably wouldn't be alive right now if it wasn't for the church who took me in and took care of me. But that being said, I ended up becoming an evangelist almost immediately. I ended up going to Bible college, was an associate pastor for a while. Then over a slow and gradual process, I started letting doubt and reason into the little God box I created. And took several years, but I eventually, you know, first I was kind of became a deist, and then I went and studied the Bible and tried to I would be also an inclusionist, you know, I didn't believe in hell. I was going through all these evolution of things, and then finally I admitted my disbelief and my atheism probably about 5 or 6 years ago. And since then, I've kind of been, I guess, a minister for the other team, you would say, trying to encourage people to come out of the atheist closet and to let people know who they are and, you know, that we're good people just like everyone else, and help change some minds in the country, you know.
Well, I hope you understand that I'm not here to say that atheists are not good people. I don't believe that I'm a better human being than you are simply for being a Christian. I do believe it's possible for people to enter into a relationship with God and he can work in our lives, but I think we're all in the same boat.
I know what you mean by that, and I was in that position as well, and I 100% believed I had a personal relationship with Jesus and would pray and talk to him and feel his voice within me, and I led many people to the Lord as well, and you know, it was a very real thing to me at the time. Again, I believe I understand that psychologically and how that happens, but I totally understand that, and a lot of my atheist friends don't understand that.
Right.
They don't get the concept of a personal relationship.
Yeah, which is important, because when somebody doesn't get the concept of a personal relationship, they'll erroneously claim that the Bible's telling us to have some kind of blind faith, which of course it's not. Now, my background's kind of the opposite of yours. I was raised as a liberal Jewish atheist. Judaism was a culture in our family and not a religion. And so I was an atheist for a good many years of my life. And I had an experience with the Spirit of Jesus Christ. I came to the conclusion that that it was not psychological. And there are many Christians who are psychologists and psychiatrists who do know the difference between autosuggestion and a genuine experience. But one thing I wanted to ask you, Richard, and it's nothing personal, it's kind of a standard question that I like to ask all atheists. When I was an atheist, I just didn't care. If I saw some manger scene at Christmas time, it didn't bother me. I didn't feel it was challenging my liberties. If somebody wanted to believe in God, I certainly thought it was foolish. But the idea of joining an atheist club, celebrating my atheism, trying to persuade people of my atheism, that would never have occurred to me. Why has that become such an important factor in your life? If God doesn't exist, why not just go your merry way and not even think about God at all?
Right. Well, I wish the word atheist didn't have to exist. I, you know, there's nothing else we define ourselves. I don't play golf, but no one forces me to say I'm an agolfist. You know, I don't believe in astrology, but I don't have to say I'm an astrologist.
Right, but you have chosen to belong to an organization.
I live in Atlanta.
But you have chosen to belong to an organization that talks about atheism, so there is a choice being made.
Right, because of the feeling of being left out of community, the feeling of, which is what I spend most of my day doing, is for lack of a better word, ministering to people who came out of the church who are still looking for that sense of community. They're looking for, you know, what do we do? Who's going to marry us? Who's going to bury us? What are we going to do on Christmas? What are we going to do? You know, you talked about being a secular Jew, which I have a lot of friends that are, and in fact, some pretty famous ones who will identify first as Jewish, but then as an atheist. But if I went around saying that I'm a Christian atheist, you know, nobody would like that. They'd be very upset. But culturally, I'm a Christian. I love Christmas. Always will love Christmas. You know, I love all the holidays. And I think there's great things to learn. I still study and read the Bible quite a bit. And all these things remain important to me. And I believe that what we have, and like I said, especially in the South, there are just thousands of people that I've interacted with who, once they give up their belief, they're basically ostracized from their family, they're ostracized from their friends, and they're looking for that replacement. So the only reason that they join these kind of groups, and like the groups that I'm a part of and that I run, is because they want to feel a part of something. And that they need something to fill in the gap. I mean, ideally, we shouldn't have to exist. But there's a real oppression of people, especially who were once believers, and when they leave, that, I mean, their life just goes to hell. I know several atheists who still go to church just for the sake of community and for their family.
Well, I'm very sorry to hear that happens. I have certainly never shined off anyone who stopped being a Christian, and I don't know of anyone at my church who has, but I'm sure that does happen, and that's a very sad thing. I think we should
but if we're honest, though, and, you know, I mean, you and I have talked a few times and emailed back and forth, and you seem like a great guy, and I could see us getting along, and, you know, if we live near each other, having each other over for barbecues or whatever, and everything would be fine, except there's one big major difference. I just think your views are wrong. You think I'm going to have an eternal judgment for my views. And so that is a big difference.
Well, what I believe about eternal judgment might surprise you, because I believe God will take a person's sincerity into consideration. But why don't we go ahead and get into that? And by the way, I do want to just, in front of our audience, thank you for coming on the program. You sound like a very nice guy to me, too. And I think it's wonderful that people can get together and have these conversations in a respectful way. I don't think that's happening enough in our country, whether we're talking about religion, politics, you name it. So it's very much to your credit that you're willing to come on. And I do want to thank you for that right up front.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, what I'd like to do, Richard, is have you maybe one item at a time, tell me some things about Christianity that have caused you to stop believing. As you said, you believed in this at one time. And maybe we could do them one at a time, give me a chance to respond. And then certainly, if you'd like to ask some questions of me and my beliefs and why I'm not an atheist, absolutely. But why don't we start there? Why don't you maybe start by telling us something about Christianity that you just find too incredible to believe, or what was that final nail in the coffin that made you doubt? I understand you still have a respect for Christians and the holidays, and you still study the Bible. That's great. But obviously, you're now studying it as one who's convinced it is not true. What convinces you that it's not true?
Well, I study it the same way I study other religious texts or other historic writings, and not just to pick holes in it and to find errors. You know, there are a lot of beautiful things. And I actually believe that some biblical literacy would be very helpful, not just for people understanding. In fact, the people who, you know, back to the whole personal relationship thing, and you've probably seen this a lot too, some of the people who scream the loudest that they have the personal relationship with Jesus have no idea what the Bible says whatsoever.
I think you're absolutely right about that. You know, absolutely.
They're clueless. But the... you know, just to understand certain types of, you know, again, the science fiction. I mean, there's certain things in Shakespeare. There's certain things, you know, The Matrix, all these things that you wouldn't understand if you're illiterate about the Bible. It's an important part of our culture. A lot of things have happened from it. So I encourage people to study it, but no different, you know, not that I would think that it's, you know, obviously written from God. The concept to me, and again, I know no one's perfect. I know that, you know, Christians are just sinners and that are forgiven, and I understand all of that. The first thing that started to be a big problem for me, and again, to back up a little bit, is one of the first things that happens, and it's kind of a personal pet peeve of mine, you haven't done it, but other people have, is when they find out I was a Christian, I'm an atheist, the first thing they say is, "What happened?" You know, as if something bad had to happen to cause me to have disbelief.
Right.
When it's the exact opposite. It's something happened that caused me and most people to become a Christian. You know, they have some type of rock bottom experience, or they turn to Jesus, you know, and you know, God saved me from my sins. And, you know, something happened that made me a Christian, but my slow allowing myself to doubt and even to question whether the Bible was inerrant or not, allowing myself to even question things like, you know, Noah's Ark, or, you know, all these, you know, common things that you hear. And I don't like to nitpick those things. But the big concept that really started bothering me was the concept of hell. And I think that it's a big, I think it's a big issue for a lot of ministers or former ministers that I know, who are now atheists, that usually is the starting point, the concept of hell.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people could relate to that. And by the way, I do think it's possible for people to be in any belief system and change their beliefs because they started asking questions. There's an old saying, only fools never doubt. So I will take you at your word. You decided not to be a Christian anymore because you consider yourself a free thinker, and there were some issues that concerned you. I'm not operating under any assumption that you had to have some kind of apostasy.
And it was a horrifying decision. It was not easy at all.
I'm sure it wasn't.
Especially with the concept of hell. I mean, the amount of time I tried to spend deceiving myself, and by caveat, deceiving God, if he existed, was that, you know, just in case, you know, the whole, what do you call it, Pascal's wager, you know, what if I'm wrong, and that it was such a scary thing, and I kind of jokingly say that, you know, hell's like the original terroristic threat.
Okay.
You know, it has kept a lot of people in the pews.
Well, let's talk about that then. Let's talk about the doctrine of hell, because I think a lot of our listeners could relate to that. So if the Bible had not taught that we serve a God who sends people to hell, but had taught that we serve a God who lets people into heaven, whatever else might have concerned you about the Bible, let's just look at that one subject alone. Would that have been an okay belief for you in a God who lets people into heaven?
It would have been easier.
Okay.
Now it would have been easier.
Okay.
I mean,
so then who would...
It's interesting, and there's an interesting study about the hell and the early church. And I think most people, their concept of what hell is comes more from Dante or from the, you know, the Roman Catholic Church than it does actually from the Bible. I would even argue that several times, you know, there's five different words that are used in the Bible for the word hell, and they aren't all meant to mean the same thing. And I think we've kind of, through our, you know, theology and probably the church's desire, and specifically the Roman Church, to control people, you know, they use the concept of hell.
I think you're right about that. I don't necessarily myself believe that hell is a place where people eternally burn, for example. However, the idea of hell being a place where people receive some kind of punishment. So if I'm understanding you correctly, a God who would send people to heaven but not hell, that would have been easier, that would have been more palatable.
Well, it would have been easier to not, I mean, it would have made more sense with my understanding of what the compassion and the love of God should be.
Okay, now then...
God is just and whatnot, but...
Would you want to see this God let everybody into hell, including a murderer, a rapist? I mean, including a murderer and a rapist?
No, but... Well, here's my story with that. What I started thinking about, it's like, you know, I love Disney World. I know your show last week was about Disney.
That's right.
You know, I love going to Disney, love taking my kids to Disney World. I think it's great, you know. But if I was told that somebody called me up and said, hey, you won a free pass for your family for a whole week in Disney World. You know, you all get to go. You can eat in all the restaurants in Epcot, because that's basically all I care about is all the, you know, great food. You can, you know, ride all the rides. Everything's great. There's only just one little thing, though. There's a guy. He's one guy. He's a bad guy. He's a really bad guy. But he's going to be tortured underneath the Epcot ball while you're there. But he's a really bad guy, and don't worry about it. I couldn't at all enjoy myself, regardless of how bad this person was, even if they were a murderer. The fact that they were being tortured for me to enjoy a vacation, I couldn't take it. However, God, who is loves us more than we can even love our own children, he knew that the vast majority of his creation would choose not to follow him and would end up, you know, wide is the way into destruction. And he was okay to go ahead and make us anyway because he wanted to be worshipped.
Okay, let me go ahead and interject. I like what you're saying, but just so we can, because of our limits in time, and we can keep this more of a dialogue. Okay, so you wouldn't want to be at Disney World if you found that somebody was being tortured while you were there. What if it was phrased differently? What if you were told there's this murderer and rapist who wanted to go to Disneyland, but we want to assure you, while you and your family are at Disneyland, he will not be there. It has nothing to do with him being tortured. Would you just be glad to know that he's not going to be there, and therefore you and your family can be safe?
Of course.
So supposing all hell was a place where God was going to see to it that heaven remains heaven. Obviously, if a murderer and a rapist is in heaven, it's not heaven any longer. That doesn't mean we have to jump to the conclusion that they're being tortured somewhere. But the idea to me would seem that if God's a loving and a just God, that he's not going to let some evil person into heaven and paradise, because obviously the moment he does that, it's no longer heaven and paradise.
So what happens to those people? Do they cease to exist, or
they would live out their existence somewhere else, separated from? It would be very much like somebody. I believe that if human beings are created in the image of God, then we should see reflections of him, and that would be included in our court system, when our court systems are just, which they aren't always. But you seem to be, you seem to me to be a person of very high ethics. So I'm certain if there was some murderer or rapist, and a judge just let that person go free and wasn't willing to, I mean, whatever you might think about capital punishment, if that judge wasn't at least willing to lock that person up and keep him out of society, would you not view that judge as an irresponsible judge and an unjust judge for that matter?
Well, of course, but I'm trying to see how that jives with, and I don't know your position on hell, but how that would make sense. I mean, you know, is there the grinding and gnashing of teeth? Is there not some type of eternal torture?
Yeah, the Bible teaches that hell is a place where people will live out their lives separated from God because they chose to do so. There's even some ambiguity as to whether their souls are there eternally or whether they just cease to exist. Jesus did say, don't fear him who can destroy the body, but him who can destroy both body and soul in hell. In fact, the rabbis in Jesus' day used to argue that, about it. They weren't quite clear
right.
whether hell was a place where people were for all of eternity. But I think, I don't know that we necessarily need to answer that question. To look at God's justice, all I need to know is that an evil person's not going to be in heaven. Think of Adolf Hitler. Look at the atrocities that this guy did, not just to the millions of Jews, but so many other people. And then the Allies are coming. He takes a few cyanide capsules. He checks out. And doesn't justice just cry out that, boy, he shouldn't have gotten away with that? Wouldn't we want to believe that he would answer for what he did before a loving God?
Well, what about, honestly, and this is an honest question, what if, you know, and I know everybody argues back and forth whether Jesus was Catholic or whatnot. I mean, whatever he was a crazy man. And what if, though, as he popped those pills, he was laying there and somehow he, in a sincere honesty, believed that he was wrong. And some teaching or something he heard came on his mind, and he realized that he was a horrible sinner. And he begged and was very sincere that God would forgive him and to save him. Would he be in heaven?
Okay, you are asking an excellent question, and I promise you I'll answer it because I don't want to beg an excellent question. But I'm a big believer in compartmentalization, and I'd like to hear an answer to my question first. So whatever, regardless of whether Hitler repents, would you agree that an unrepentant Hitler, for him to just check out of the universe and not have to answer for what he does, that something seems unjust? And if there were a God who would make sure that a person like that would not go to heaven, that would be a good and a just thing, that in fact a loving God would send a person like that to hell?
If all those things were true, then yes.
Okay. Now, those are big ifs. I believe those ifs correlate with the Bible. Now, to answer your question about Hitler, the Bible tells us that people reach a point in their lives where they become so evil that they're at a point of no return. There are different phrases for it. There's the blasphemy of the Holy Spirit, the reprobate heart. Do I believe Hitler had a chance to give his life to Christ like everybody else? Yes, but much earlier on. By the time he did the evil that he did, I guess I can't say I know for sure. I do not believe he was in a position where his heart was even capable
of
repenting anymore.
But using the same hypothetical, you know, situations, just in case he really did feel that way, and it really I don't think he did. I'm not claiming this at all. I'm just, you know, the ultimate question, though. If he did, then by all accounts and reasons of the Bible, then he would be in heaven. He would be forgiven.
Well, it's kind of like
many of the Jews that he killed are in hell.
Well, it's like your what was it you were asking about, unicorns? You said if I told you unicorns were here in the radio station, you'd have to suspend judgment, but you'd say you don't believe they're really here.
Sure.
The Bible paints a scenario of a person whose heart is so hard that they're way beyond repentance. Hitler absolutely reaches that scenario. He fits that to a glove.
In no way I'm trying to defend Hitler.
No.
I mean, obviously, it's just always the ultimate question of how far does it go, and does it, you know, is it just even to be able to cast your cares upon Jesus in that sense and to be not accountable for your actions?
Yeah, well, it's a good question. The Bible does teach that we're all sinful, but the Bible doesn't teach that we're all evil. And so what's the difference?
Right.
When the Bible says we're all sinful, it means we have an evil side to our nature, but we also have a good side to our nature. You sound like a person who does many good things, and I'm saying that sincerely. But you're also an honest person. If you're honest like me, you recognize there are things that go on deep in the caverns of my soul that I wouldn't want to share with anybody else. I could show people the good side, but if I'm half clean and half dirty, I still want to take a shower. I don't just walk around showing people the clean side. Now, an evil person, or sometimes the Bible uses the word wicked, would be somebody who's completely given into that evil nature. Those who want to live a righteous life recognize their sin, and they ask God to forgive them of their sin, but they have not yet reached a point where they've 100% given into that sin. And that's the difference. And I think it's a very, very important difference and distinction to make.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. That makes sense. And I guess it, again, depends on what your definition of evil or what your definition of sin would be. I think many of the things that we traditionally would say is sin are probably not, or wouldn't be. Of course, I don't believe in sin. I believe in right and wrong and moral and immoral choices.
That's all the Bible means when it says sin is right and wrong. A good workable definition would be selfishness, not positive self-esteem, not positive pride, but the kind of selfishness where we're always putting ourselves before other people. Okay, well, so then hypothetically, depending on how hell is defined and how sin is defined, you might not have that much of a problem with it, but certainly Christians have defined it a certain way to you, and you've had some very understandable responses to that. What would be some other things about Christianity that kind of led you a little bit away from it?
I don't like to single out Christianity other than the fact that, you know, I was a Christian and the vast majority of, you know, my fellow citizens in America are Christians, and you know, but I'm an equal opportunity offender.
Okay, well then we can keep this to God.
I was just in a meeting with several ex-Muslims, and it was a very very humbling experience. They have a lot more to worry about than we do. You know, when they leave their faith, they're going to get murdered.
That's absolutely true.
We're from other countries, and it's a very humbling experience. And then a lot of my atheist friends will cry because they, you know, they were at their family's house and they had to pray for Thanksgiving. Oh, life is so hard. You know, but these guys are, you know, running in for their lives. You know, I mean, it puts things in perspective for you.
It certainly does. Okay, so with God with a capital G, you don't want to necessarily limit it to Christianity. What would be some things about the concept of any kind of creator that you would take issue with?
Well, what I try to do, and I wrote something one time, kind of with the facetious title that the scientific method was the most holy thing ever written by men, or the most sacred thing. And I think that before any of these things, we have to ask, okay, how do we determine what is true? Not necessarily what is truth, capital T, but what is true, you know, what is right, or, you know, 2 + 2 = 4 type things. And I believe that some form of the scientific method is how we accomplish this. I mean, even two imams fighting in a cave somewhere are using some type of scientific method to argue the Quran, you know. And I think that things that we can prove are beyond a reasonable doubt. You know, prove is a horrible word to use for a scientific method. But things that can be proven are the things that we should rely on. I consider myself a naturalist. I don't believe there's anything outside of the natural world. And the awesomeness and just immense beauty of nature itself is enough. But I don't believe there's anything outside of the natural world, and because there's never been, and I understand you disagree with this, but there's never been proof or evidence for it. Now, the argument could be made, do I know whether there's a deistic God that created everything and quit? No, I have no idea. Could be, we'll never know. But if a God existed or some type of entity outside of our space-time and it reached into our world, it would leave some type of fingerprints, some type of evidence that we as a CSI team can use the scientific method to figure out whether they exist or not.
Well, what would you consider fingerprints? Would our DNA structure be a fingerprint, for instance, that we, you know?
No, because I think we have a pretty good understanding.
But it's a communication code, isn't it? Isn't it dealing with information and communication?
I'm not a biologist at all. I actually, I love the subject, and I love listening to people who know this much better than I do. But, you know, yeah, it is a type of code, but how it comes about and how it, you know, evolved out of RNA or whatever the theory is, I don't know where they go with on that. But, no, I wouldn't look at DNA as that, because I believe there's at least a chance that it could have evolved on its own.
Okay, let me ask you a question. What's your opinion of the rationalists, the people who believed that our mind has natural thought categories that seek to make sense out of life? They would say, well, unlike the empiricist, I'm not claiming I can prove one way or the other whether God exists, but they would ask the question, is it more rational to believe or disbelieve in a God? Now, that's a whole different question because rational evidence, you know, I think a lot of what we call proof in life, we really have on the basis of evidence. So let me pose that to you as a question. Do you believe it's more rational to the idea of a God, or is it more rational to believe that the universe exists according to randomness and chance?
Well, I would think in most areas, and if we're talking, you know, science, the default position is the negation, that you don't believe something until there is evidence for it. I do think we have a certain thing in our nature that wants to create an answer, and I think it's served us well. You know, the our ancestors who heard a noise and thought it was a tiger had a better chance of living than the ones who just turned over and said, it's probably just wind. You know, they got eaten. So it has served us well to create entities and stuff, but the default position should be the negation. That by default, I don't believe in leprechauns, but if there is evidence for them that they exist and they can be proven that they are, you know, then I would believe. But I don't believe that they would be anything supernatural. They would just be some form of the natural universe we don't understand yet, some type of physics or something that we just, you know, haven't.
Well, sure. I mean, I would agree that even something supernatural, all that would mean if it was discovered and agreed on by everybody is that we just don't yet know the natural explanation. But would you look at the human conscience as a possibility of evidence? You're a person of high ethics and values. You've articulated several of them. You wouldn't want to see a person get tortured, for instance. That's a very good quality to have. If there were no God, wouldn't morals and ethics be something that we've just made up? Wouldn't we have to become moral relativists to be consistent?
Well, again, you know, there's so many things that mean different things to different people. I believe that morality, you know, is a very complex structure that's evolved within us, and that it. You know, anytime you had one, I mean, we're social beings, and it's very hard to even exist without other humans. And as soon as you have two people in a room, there's some form of morality being created. It's usually, I think, with a child would be some type of seeking justice that, you know, that's my toy. He's playing with my toy. He took this from me. You know, that understanding of what's mine and what someone else's. And I think as society's progressed, by necessity, you had to submit to, you know, a common set of rules. And, you know, the people who, I mean, even though there's still a few of them, the cannibals, for the most part, don't exist anymore because they ate each other. You know, the people who have the love and the compassion and the love that a mother has for his child and things like that, that those things fostered and social evolution has made that an essential part of society.
Okay, but what if somebody says, well, okay, maybe those things adopted and evolved out of necessity, but since we know that it happened that way, that there really isn't any kind of God or creator, we would still have to admit that what has evolved is just opinion about what is right and wrong. Now, Richard, honestly, if we weren't discussing God and morality and philosophy and somebody said to you, is rape wrong? Is racism wrong? Was slavery wrong? Wouldn't you just say it was wrong? I don't think you would qualify that by saying, well, in my opinion, the way I've evolved, I'm of the opinion it's wrong.
Yeah, and I have a big problem with people who say the other, who I was just in an argument with another atheist talking about certain cultures and tribes that is a tradition that they sacrifice their firstborn child, and who are we to judge them for what right or wrong is? And I think that is the very essence and the science of morality. I think it's a science that we're just now starting to understand. And I think that, you know, just like we know health-wise, if you eat this, it's good for you. If you don't eat this, it's, you know, this other thing's bad for you, that there's certain things in society that can be determined the same way. But our values are determined by our society and by our families, and they evolve and they adapt and they change. The same has been true with the church. The same has been true with our interpretations of the Bible. You know, so many things have changed, and we've found other verses as our societies have evolved you know, along with it, same, you know, with slavery, women's rights, all these things. It's, oh, well, the Bible also says this. We didn't realize that. You know, and that's the beauty to me of living in a secular government that allows the freedom of people to speak, that challenges the old iron sharpening iron,
right,
and challenge the church, and that the church is able to improve and to change and to...
Well, I would say that the Bible in the New Testament condemns slavery all the way through, but let's get back to that because I don't want to drift off the subject. So,
yes,
since
I would like to hear that because
okay.
I totally
well, we'll get back to that and please remind me. But since you would disagree, you told me you would disagree with somebody that says we should respect some culture that would have a human sacrifice. Okay, the minute we say that is not something I respect. There is such a thing as right and wrong. There is such a thing as human rights. Would you not have to agree, though, that even though I agree with you and not your atheist friends, they are actually being more consistent with the idea that there is no God, because they're saying if there is no God, human beings made up morals, because there's no God to be the tiebreaker. You say we should not sacrifice a human being. This person says we should. You're just two accidents that accidentally evolved to a higher order. It's only your opinion. And so to be consistent with the belief that there's no God, we would have to become moral relativists. But I've never met a true moral relativist. Friedrich Nietzsche probably came the closest. Even your atheist friends,
and
I'll bet you there's all kinds of morals
myself,
that they do agree with. Go ahead.
I think there's ways that we do determine, you know, what is for the benefit of ourselves and for our society. And I do believe that morality is something that evolved with us, necessity for survival, and that it also is, you know, determined by a society, because a society can change and a society can say, okay, slavery is okay, it's acceptable, and they can pull out scriptures to justify it and whatnot. But they, you know, they have to change their standards of what is a human to be able to do that.
That's exactly right. The only way the pre-Civil War South justified slavery is they had to create this ideology that African Americans were subhuman, because they knew that the moment they admitted they were human beings, there was something inside their conscience that said human beings must be treated a certain way. But what I'm saying, Richard, is even when you say, well, morals can exist just for the benefit of society, even to say that something should benefit society is a moral standard. It's an articulation of right and wrong. It still begs the question, where did that right and wrong come from if there's no God? Either it's our opinion, the opinion of one accident to another, or it comes from some kind of entity outside of ourselves that put it into our DNA and into our conscience.
I don't think that's the only choices.
What would be the other choice?
I do think there's the philosophy in general. Mostly when people talk about Christian ideals even though atheism has no belief system, that's another thing I always hate to... I hate that I even have to use, like I said earlier, the word atheist, because that's what I don't believe in. I mean, I'm a naturalist, I'm a humanist, I'm a skeptic, I'm these things. That's what I positively...
I understand that, and I can sympathize with that.
Right. But I do think that we ultimately still, our societies and evolve constantly in what they understand to be right.
But if you're saying that we're evolving... If we're evolving in what we understand to be right, are you assuming that there is this correct right and wrong standard that we are correctly evolving to?
In some, it depends on how you define it. Like for me, a moral position would be something that is to the benefit of me personally, or a benefit to my family, or to my society, or you know, there's a cause and effect aspect to it.
Okay, but would you agree that morality is
the way I want them to treat me?
Would you agree that morality is a commentary on the way personalities interrelate to each other? In other words, moral principles don't float around like alphabet soup in the universe. You can't have morality without personality. So the moment you say that something should benefit society, or there's a morality we should strive for, either it's merely our opinion that we should strive for it because we are the only personalities here, or it comes from a higher personality.
No, I wouldn't go that far. I don't think it does. I just in the same way that there are good foods to eat and bad foods to eat. And there's different opinions on that, of course, and a lot of people can't agree. But that's not because the food ultimately came from a god or some type of being. It's that we are able to study those and see their effects on our body and are able to determine what is good and bad to eat. And I think
yes,
that's the same way with moral actions.
Well, you could say that moral actions are good or bad for society, but what if you're talking to somebody who says, I don't give a rat's behind what's good or bad for society? Would you tell that person?
I don't want them to be a part of my society,
well, but,
because my society is built upon the respect of the individual.
Of course. You wouldn't want him to be a part of it, but would you also just say to him, your position is morally wrong? Or would you say, well, your position is just as valid as anybody else's, but we happen to disagree?
No, I would not say that it's valid. It could be, you know, if he thinks it is, that's fine, but he's not going to interact in my society.
Okay, well, what makes it, you said you wouldn't say it valid. What makes it invalid? If there's no God, isn't his opinion of morality and what's beneficial to society just as valid as yours?
No, because I think that there's views, you know, even certain views on, you know, finances or, you know, conservatism versus liberalism, or there's all the kinds of things that you can have.
Okay, look,
right or wrong.
Richard, of course, we can always find something where there's room for more than one opinion. But we've articulated several subjects where there isn't room for more than one opinion. Is there more than one opinion about whether rape is wrong, whether racism is wrong, whether slavery is wrong?
There's more than one opinion, but not...
Is there more than one moral opinion? Is there more than one moral opinion?
Yeah, I think there's good morals and bad morals, both. So
okay, but the minute you're saying...
Probably are sick and twisted and believe...
Okay.
For whatever reason.
So somebody who thinks racism is okay or slavery is okay has a bad moral, and they're sick and twisted. Correct?
I would think so, yes.
Okay. How's that possible? How's that possible if there's no
and my education?
How is that possible if there's no God? If there's no God, wouldn't we have to just say that that person's opinion is as valid as anybody else's? Who's to if there's no God to break the tie? Who's to say that it's sick and twisted? I agree with you, of course.
Me. I mean, I can say that because I, you know, I've studied philosophy. I've studied cultures and societies and have seen. What happens if, you know, if all of us lived that way, we would never have a society. If every time I went to the grocery store, I had to worry about everyone going to kill me, then we wouldn't last very long as a society.
Okay, and then Joe Schmo says, I've studied too. Who am I to say that those things are okay? Me. I've studied. I've evolved.
Yeah, well, yeah,
and he says, I don't care about society.
And thank goodness the vast majority disagree with him.
Well, but the majority...
He's going to jail.
Right, but the majority's not always correct. There was a time when the majority agreed with...
Throughout history, we can see tons of examples.
That's right.
The majority.
That's right. So saying that the majority determines what's right and wrong doesn't answer the question of where right and wrong comes from then, does it?
Well, I didn't say where it comes from. I was talking about who determines...
Okay, well, we can either say it's a mystery... Or we can say it comes from us and our opinion, or we can say there's some kind of creator that put that conscience inside of us, and that's why we have these feelings of right and wrong. Those would be the three choices.
If the creator put it in them, then why are there people who don't have those feelings?
Well, the fact that people don't live up to this stuff is one of the greatest arguments that it comes from something outside of us, because if we were going to invent our own morality, we'd invent a morality we could live up to better. The fact that we have this conscience, which tells us not to be selfish, and we're all so darn selfish. The fact that we have this conscience that tells us we should not hurt our fellow man, and we're constantly hurting our fellow man, suggests very strongly that the conscience is pointing us to something far higher than human beings have ever been.
See, we'll just have to agree to disagree on. I don't see it that way. I understand where you're coming from, and if the world was more, you know, like you, it'd be a better place.
Okay. Well, Richard, if the world was more like you, it would be a better place, too.
I've written about these that are just kind of starting out. Sam Harris and the Moral Landscape, and there's a guy in Atlanta that actually wrote a book called The Bonobo and the Atheist. And he talked about a lot of the morals and the things that they're seeing within chimpanzees and the bonobos and different self-sacrificing things that they do and how they could have evolved. And I think it's a new science that we don't know a whole lot about. My argument would be that morality came first, then religion, not the other way around. You know, the idea that we didn't know it was wrong to kill and to steal before Moses came down with the Ten Commandments.
Well, you understand, I hope you understand that nothing in the argument that I just gave was suggesting that people don't have a sense of morality if they haven't opened up the Bible. I was honoring you. You said you wanted to do God with a capital G, so I've been steering
right,
us off the Bible.
I understand what you're saying. Right. I agree.
I agree.
In the general sense, when people say that.
Morals were here first, but that still begs the question of where those morals came from. Well, my friend, in the few minutes we have left, I want to give you a chance, because you said you wanted to agree to disagree with this. If you have a question for me, if you want to return to that slavery thing, here's your chance, or any other question that you came with, I want to be fair.
Actually, no. My main concern and way I see my purpose currently, or the purpose that I have made for myself, should I say, is to encourage conversation, to encourage the dialogue, to help people, especially non-believers, to come out of the closet, so to speak, to not be afraid of telling their neighbors and their family members that they don't believe. There are some negative side effects, but, you know, like the huge change of, and this is a whole other topic, but even like with homosexuality, a lot of the opinions started changing when people started coming out of the closet. And so when a preacher or someone would get up and talk about the evils of homosexuality, if someone could say, well, my uncle's gay and he's not that bad of a guy. My neighbor's a gay guy and he's not really bad. I don't, you know, and it started to be able to question things. As we sit right now, the majority of the people who are out as atheists are just the jerks in the room, you know, the ones who are crying in the wilderness. And they're necessary, you know, to challenge stereotypes or whatnot. But it's got to happen from the ground up. It has to happen when people realize, you know, that we are good people, just like anyone else.
Right, but we can disagree with somebody without jumping to the conclusion that they're not good people. I can disagree that the lifestyle of homosexuality is correct and still say, however, I know many gay people, and yeah, they are nice guys, and I don't respect them any less as human beings. And of course, the main point you're trying to make is I don't think atheists are bad people. I just think atheists have a position that I happen to disagree with that I think can be challenged with the laws of logic and ration.
And that's the way it should be. And hopefully I try to approach the information, and I'm not sure if you do, maybe you do, maybe you don't. If for some reason you were presented with evidence that made you question or doubt, would you be willing to change your mind?
Oh, absolutely. And people present it to me all the time. And I'd like to invite you right now to present some to me if you'd like to.
Not necessarily. I was just wondering that question.
No, of course. Look, Richard, if what I'm following is not true, then I've wasted a lot of time and I don't want to waste any more. I'm convinced it is true.
I don't think a lot of people would feel that way. And I admire you for saying that. And I'll take you at your word on that. And I think I think it's good. And even as a believer, I thought it was good to question and to doubt. And the best, you know, anything that can be shaken should be shaken, so to speak, you know.
Oh, absolutely. Did you hear what we called our program right from the top? A sanctuary for skeptics and doubters. And that's a designation I've used often over the years for this radio program.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. Well, we've got a few more minutes left. Did you want to return to the slavery thing since you brought it up? I know you didn't. It sounds like you didn't necessarily come here to argue, and that's great, but you did bring that up. Do you want to return to that for a few minutes?
I think it's pretty evident, and I think that I have a talk that I do, and it's actually available on YouTube if somebody wants to look it up. It's Thank God America's a Secular Nation. And it talks about how Christians, above all else, should be thankful to God that we do have a secular nation, because it's made them stronger, and it's allowed dissenting voices to be heard that if the church was in control, they wouldn't necessarily be able to be heard. And that the church has evolved in its ideas of what morality is, like with the slave issue.
Well, there's three places in the New Testament that condemn slavery, but it's also true that at that time in history, there were more slaves than citizens in Rome. And Peter explained that slavery was an institution that he wanted people to be considered free from. But at the moment, rather than turning Christianity into a violent bloodbath, He would have asked slaves to obey their masters, but Paul told them, if there's any way you can gain your freedom, you should do so. And when he had a chance to talk to his friend Philemon and encourage him to let his slave go, he said so. He called slave trading an evil in 1 Timothy chapter 1. He said, in the church, there's neither slave nor free.
Those have been developed, but Jesus also said, slaves, obey your masters.
The Apostle Paul said that because, again, at that time, it would have become another Spartacus. They were looking for a peaceful revolution, but wanting a peaceful revolution, for instance, Gandhi didn't encourage the British soldiers to take up arms either, but he certainly wanted the British out of India. So the Apostle Paul did not believe in slavery. He didn't believe in a violent bloodbath either. Well, look, Richard, you're welcome to come back. We're out of time. Please come back on our show again. You're a great guy. I thoroughly enjoyed talking with you. Thank you so much for taking your time this evening.
It's lots of fun, Bob. Thank you very much.
Okay. God bless you, my friend. And I will see you next week, everybody. This is Bob Siegel. You are always welcome. Your questions are welcome, too.
The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.